Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, March 26th, 2024, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-host, Anastasia. Our Pleiadian lineup, Starseed Quest, is May 17th through the 20th, and we have had two spots open up. This is a soul family reunion, and any starseed with at least one galactic degree on their charts is eligible to attend. If you feel the call to join us but don't know if you have the required markings, just write to crystals@starseedhotline.com, and we'll take a quick look and let you know. Well, we've been watching the transits of Jupiter and Uranus get closer to each other, and by April 20th, they will be conjunct, which means occupying the same degree. This only happens about once every 14 years, so you don't want to miss the chance to make the most of it. And the last time it happened in Taurus was 83 years ago. On a planetary level, this will bring much-needed change, with Jupiter bringing opportunities for expansion and growth, while Uranus revolutionizes the way things are. More humanitarianism and responsibility for nature is evolving on Earth, along with a great spiritual awakening. But what does this mean for the individual? Personal growth, abundance, freedom from restrictions, and a higher spiritual quest are common effects, but you need to know where it's hitting your chart to understand the areas with the greatest opportunity for abundance, growth, creativity, and change. In this episode, I will describe the effects of this rare conjunction on each house, and it will affect everyone. The energies of Jupiter and Uranus cannot be denied or evaded, so you need to know what they bring to your chart to make the most of this very beneficial time. And you can check out our website, which is starseedhotline.com. At the top of the show, it's Anastasia's Starseed News, bringing topics of interest and hope to starseeds that you won't hear in the mainstream. And we would like to thank Kathy and Jada for hosting the switchboard tonight for those who may have a question or comment. If you're already an astrologer and are ready to learn advanced starseed astrology, please send me an email, Arielle@starseedhotline.com. Lavendar and I are gathering a small group of qualified people to learn the starseed codes. Our main website, as I said, is starseedhotline.com. The Stage 1 starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your natal astrological chart, and the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one Zoom session. We also have a new daily transit service to help you navigate your life and mission with greater success, even if you know little or nothing about astrology. And remember, if you have a birthday coming up, you're going to get a window of 10 hours of great manifestation power. So you can find out exactly when it happens by requesting your solar return timing. And please order that a week or two before your birthday. But if you want a reading of that chart, order it about 2 months before your birthday. So, first up, I would like to introduce Anastasia with her fascinating starseed news.
Well, hello, everybody. Good evening. Hello. It's great to be with you tonight. Thank you for the applause. Wonderful. Thank you. Well, we have some fun stories tonight. Yes, it is fun. We need to have fun, more fun.
Yeah.
Bring on the laughter. Yes. Well, I have some interesting things. I decided today I was going to share some knowledge with all of you, so bear with me. Some of it's amazing and fun. But I bet that you never thought about this, but where would you stand on Earth to be closest to the stars? How would you get close to the absolutely closest to the stars you could physically be? Well, most people's immediate reaction would probably be, oh, the top of Mount Everest. That's got to be it. But that would not be correct. Mount Everest, 29,000-foot peak, places it at the highest above sea level. But if you measure from the base to the peak, Mauna Kea in Hawaii is the tallest mountain on Earth, measuring over 33,500 feet. Although it just peaks out at just under 14,000 feet above sea level. See, when you measure something, it depends on where you start.
Right.
Well, to get the furthest away from the center of the Earth, you would need to scale Mount Chimborazo in Ecuador, which is only the 39th tallest mountain in the Andes. But it also happens to be the spot on Earth that's closest to the stars. And all of that has to do with the fact that the Earth is not exactly round. As the planet spins, the centrifugal force causes the planet to bulge at the center by about 27 miles, which just happens to be along the line where Mount Chimborazo sits. With this slightly unfair advantage, the peak of Ecuador's Mount Chimborazo is the furthest point on our planet from the center of the Earth, standing 6,800 feet further from that center point than Everest. And if you stand on top of Mount Chimborazo, you are the closest you can possibly get to the stars without leaving the ground. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we all love our dogs. We know our dogs are good for us. And, you know, sometimes we just need to chill out. We need to pause and relax, as in dog pause. A new study shows that it only takes 3 minutes of playing with your dog to see an increase in a person's alpha brainwaves. Those are the brainwaves that indicate that we're getting relaxed. South Korean researchers have attached headsets with electrodes to 30 adults and had them meet, play, feed, massage, groom and hug, walk, and photograph a poodle. I might not have chosen a poodle, but that's fine. It's a nice dog. And in addition to a boost in alpha brainwaves, participants also had stronger beta brainwaves, signaling that their concentration improved. So if you needed any reason to, you know, have a dog, I just gave you another two excellent reasons. It will make you a much better person. So if you don't get a dog, adopt a dog, help a dog, help a shelter that takes care of dogs, do something for dogs. Boy, dogs are amazing. They are the best. What can I say? Well, speaking of dogs, I want to talk about frogs. The Muppets, you know, you remember Kermit the Frog?
Mm-hmm.
Who doesn't remember Kermit the Frog? Kermit's still around. Well, they have decided to name a 270 million-year-old fossil after Kermit, the world's most famous frog. Now, scientists actually found this fossilized skull in a collection at the Smithsonian National Museum of Natural History. It was in the museum, and they just discovered it. That sounds kind of like my house. They have more stuff than they know. They don't even know what they've got. That's probably what they did with the giants. They just took them and stashed them somewhere, and now nobody knows where they are. But anyway, we're not talking about giants right now. We're talking about fossils, a 270 million-year-old brand-new discovery that is a new species of proto-amphibian. And what did they name it? Kermit Tops gratis, because they say it bears a likeness to the Muppet. Well, you know, if we can remember anything about Kermit the Frog, we know he was very shy. He probably would be embarrassed, probably blush at all this attention. But anyway, Kermit, you now have a fossil named after you, Kermitops gratis, 270 million-year-old proto-amphibian. It's been laying in the Smithsonian for how long and just been discovered. So there you go. I think that's the most amazing part of that story, that they had stuff they don't even know what they have. Okay. Well, which state is closest to Africa? Now listen, have you ever really needed to get somewhere in a hurry? And you, like, need to get there, like, right away, like, hopefully, you know, like a bird flies. You don't want to stop along the way and have snacks and swing by the world's biggest ball of twine. You don't want to wander. You don't want to take Route 66. You need to go where you're going right now. So I'm here to help you out. In case any of you need to get to Africa and you need to get there quick, I'm here to help. So if you need to get to Africa fast, which state would you embark from? Oh, no, no, forget the airplanes. I got other plans for you. Just tell me, what state would be the closest state to Africa? Well, if you look at a map, it's just got to be Florida, right? You'd think so.
You'd think so.
Well, I got news for you. No, it's not Florida. I'm in a contrary mood tonight. I'm giving you ideas, things you would never guess, because it's amazing stuff. Well, the Sunshine State, Florida, the easternmost point of that is a place called Singer Island. It's outside of West Palm Beach. It's about a little over 4,000 miles from one small village in Western Sahara. And Florida is not the closest point to the African continent by almost 1,000 miles. Could it be North Carolina, whose Cape Hatteras juts out into the Atlantic? Would you believe that's even closer? But at 3,600 miles from Morocco, it's still not the closest. So maybe it's Cape Cod, Massachusetts, right? No way. The eastern edge of the Cape is closer than Cape Hatteras, 3,332 miles, but it still isn't the closest. So let me just cut to the chase. The title of the closest United States state to Africa belongs to Maine, and specifically a peninsula in the state of Maine called Quoddy Head. It's a quaint little lighthouse. It's located at the easternmost point of the United States, and it's the closest point to Africa, only 3,154 miles. So if you're ever inclined to take a nice long swim over to the sand-swept shores of Northwest Africa, you might want to just begin in Maine at the little lighthouse at Quoddy Head. So there you go. Who would think that Maine would be the closest route to Africa, mind you, not taking an airplane? But then who would ever expect anybody to swim?
Well
anyway.
No.
Speaking of silliness, what about the crazy court cases we're hearing about now in the news? I mean, such ridiculous stuff. They argue till the cows come home. They split hairs. They try to thread camels through the eye of a needle. They are arguing over the most minute details endlessly. It's enough to make a person want to just hide. But do you know there was another crazy court case way back when over a tomato? Tomato, tomato, whatever. Well, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in 1893 that a tomato is a vegetable and not a fruit. The case was Nix versus Hedden, 149 U.S. in 1893. Yeah, this really was a decision by the Supreme Court of the United States in which the court unanimously held that tomatoes should be classified as vegetables rather than fruits. And what brought all of this about? Well, money, of course. It had to do with tariffs, imports, customs, and taxes. The justice at that time delivered the opinion of the court, holding that the Tariff Act of 1883 used the ordinary meaning of the words fruit and vegetable instead of the technical botanical meaning. Anyway, they had to decide for everybody, once and for all, that a tomato is a fruit and not a vegetable. That's right. Did you know that 1 teaspoon of neutron star material weighs 6 billion tons?
One?
Did you know?
Wow.
Yeah, 1 teaspoon of neutron star material weighs 6 billion tons. Man, I don't know how they can ever figure this stuff out, but we'll go with it. Did you know that there was a proposed amendment to the Constitution in 1916 that would put all acts of war to a national vote, and anyone voting yes would have to register as a volunteer for service in the United States Army? What do you think about that? That would work. That might simmer them down a bit. I don't know whatever happened to that law. I'm sorry, it was a proposed amendment. Needless to say, it never passed. Alaska is the most northern, eastern, and western state in the United States. Now, just think about that for a minute. Did you know that? Alaska is the most northern. That's pretty obvious. But eastern and western, it is. In the United States, Alaska has 3 corners covered. And for you women out there that are a little bit still into toxic masculinity and you really want, you know, the old-fashioned kind of man's man in your life, take heart. There's a few left. Because one out of every 200 men is a direct descendant of Genghis Khan.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah. So there's got to be some tough guys left out there somewhere. One out of 200 men is a direct descendant of Genghis Khan. That kid, that guy had a lot of kids. That's pretty amazing. Here is something that, you know, I'm just giving you the news, okay? This is what was in the news the last couple of weeks. This came from a science magazine. Did you know that the moon on the other side of the world is flipped upside down and is freaking people out? What am I talking about? Well, this is true. If you step off the plane, having traveled across the world to the opposite hemisphere, the seasons down there are all backwards, and when you look up at the full moon, you realize it's not the right way up. Now, having not been to Australia or anywhere that far south, I've never had this experience. But it's true, and it's incredibly weird. How did we not realize this before? I don't know. I never think about it. But this curious quirk of our round planet actually has surprising implications for researchers that are trying to investigate our night sky. An astronomer from the University of Southern Queensland in Australia explains that, from our perspective, he said, the moon in the night sky is actually rotated 180 degrees compared to our northern hemispherical friends. In the south, we see the moon's dark Oceanus Procellarium Sea in the southeast corner. Compared to in the north, the people up north, they see it in the northwest corner. Completely opposite. But why does it look like this? Well, because physically, we are actually upside down compared to someone standing in the opposite hemisphere. Right now at this moment, the people in Australia are standing upside down from us. That's right. This also extends to the crescent moon. Depending where you live in the world, you will get a different rotation of the crescent. They tell us that next time we plan a holiday travel to a country near the equator during a crescent moon, when the moon sets, it will look exactly like a smiling face. And it's not just the moon that's prone to changing orientation. All of the stars we see will either be different or upside down as well. It depends on where you're located on Earth, but generally the constellations we see in the southern hemisphere are rotated again by 180 degrees compared to the northern hemisphere. In Australia, Orion's Leg and Belt is commonly known as the saucepan because it looks like a big old cooking pot. So how can you see what the other side of the world sees? Well, somebody solved that for us. The astronomers tell us just to simply get upside down. You can stand on your hands. Yeah, that's what they tell us. Or bend your, when you lay down on the ground, bend your neck back to arch, bend your neck until you arch your back and you know, your eyes are level with the earth and you're actually looking at the sky upside down. And by the way, if all this is blowing our minds, we should never forget that the water goes down the drain in the other direction, called the Coriolis effect. That happens on the other side of the world, too. And that's a fact. That's not bogus. And neither is the moon being upside down. And neither is the fact that we're upside down to them and they're upside down to us. That's just amazing. All right. Well, the Horned Devil Comet is returning back for the first time in 71 years. The latest approach of the Devil Comet will occur simultaneously with a total solar eclipse in North America on the 8th of April, and should be visible in the sky during the event. As you all probably know, comets are made up of dust, frozen gases, ice, and rocks, bound together following the formation on the solar system, and a rare and massive one with a devilish nickname, which was originally spotted in 1812, is set to pass by Earth for the first time in 71 years. They say it will be visible during the highly anticipated 8th of April solar eclipse, according to NASA. Officially named 12P Pons Brooks, the Cairo Volcanic Comet is known, as you said, the Devil Comet, because the reason it was named that is because it has two horns made up of ice and gas and periodic explosions, they say. It's going to be in its next perihelion passage. It will reach its closest point to the sun and shine the brightest on the 21st of April, again, according to NASA. The agency says this astronomical event coincides with the total solar eclipse in North America, which will allow shadow parts of the United States from Texas to Maine when the moon passes between, which will shadow parts of the United States from Texas to Maine when the moon passes between the sun and the earth. In the abrupt absence of sunlight during totality, NASA says sky watchers will have a view of the vast sky dark enough to observe the stars, planets, and probably 12P Pons Brooks as it zips through the solar system. So, it says they're both coming in into our skies about the same time, and it's sort of a big event to get both of these together. Well, let's talk about people's behavior. This is a cute story. It's amazing sometimes the things that people can do, the kindness of strangers. They had a snowstorm recently in Utah, and strangers got together to milk 50 goats. That's right, 50 goats that were stuck in a snowstorm. The driver that was transporting the goats, his last name was Garcia, was prevented from moving. He was stuck in traffic for 5 hours, and the goats that he was hauling had... they needed to be milked. Quite frankly, they had swollen udders, and they were suffering. And the goat driver, as soon as the car started moving, he desperately drove to a livestock supply store and asked for help. He gathered the customers around him. He explained to everybody how you milk a goat. And soon, the employees of the store, local farmers and people just that were there in the parking lot, started milking the goats right there in the parking lot. Saved the goats from suffering and saved the milk. He told the Washington Post, "I now consider all of these strangers to be my friends." Amazing. Well, astronomers have detected a distant planet described as a water world with a boiling ocean. This is in deep space. It was a significant discovery by NASA's James Webb telescope. They say that it's made progress in searching for habitable conditions beyond Earth. I don't know why they think a water world with a boiling ocean is habitable, but that's what the article is talking about, habitable planets. Anyway, the observations of the telescope revealed that water vapor and chemical signatures of methane and carbon in the atmosphere of this planet, this exoplanet, which is twice the Earth's radius and about 70 light years away. Only 70 light years away. That's close. It's a chemical mix consistent with a water world where the ocean would span the entire surface, according to researchers at Cambridge. I mean, that's really close. They're finding more and more of these, which is really intriguing. Really intriguing. And lastly, I want to talk to you about Peru. I've brought this up from time to time, but now there is a final ruling. And this is a ruling that the first time Peru has recognized that ecosystems possess legal rights and is based on a constellation of legal precedents in international and Peruvian law. The Marañón River, which flows from Peru's Andes Mountains into the Amazon, has intrinsic value and possesses the rights to exist, to flow, to be free from pollution, among all other rights, according to a Peruvian trial court. The case, which is reported by Climate News, marks the first time that Peru has legally recognized the so-called rights of nature, which is the idea that certain ecosystems, individual species, or the earth itself possess inherent rights to exist, to regenerate, and to evolve. The court also ruled that indigenous organizations and various government agencies are guardians, defenders, and representatives of the river and its tributaries, meaning those entities have the authority to speak on behalf of the waterways in governmental decision-making and in court. Now, around the world, it's been common for maybe 15 or 20 years for entities like corporations, governments, and universities to be given legal personhood, which means that they have been given certain rights and can, through human reps, representatives, go to court to represent them. Now today, slowly but surely, ecosystems are started, you know, being given the same rights. In 2008, Ecuador adopted a new constitution that recognizes the rights of nature, making it the first in the world to do so. This recognition means that natural ecosystems have the right to exist, to thrive, and evolve. Additionally, the Constitution grants individuals and communities the right to defend these rights on behalf of nature, human spokespersons, as it were. According to the court, it's about protecting nature and the environment, not only because of its connection with the utility for human beings, or because of the effects that its degradation could cause on other people's rights, such as health, life, or personal integrity, but due to its importance for the other living organisms with which the planet is shared, also deserving of protection in and of themselves. Absolutely. Amen to that.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, tremendous. All right, I'm going to leave you with a quote. Robert Louis Stevenson, everybody's heard of him. You know what he said? I think it's wise. He said, "Don't judge each day by the harvest that you reap, but by the seeds that you plant." So I think that's very important. We may have days where we don't feel like we've been very productive, or maybe we've had a small setback, but it's what you've done, what you've prepared, the seeds that you've planted that count. So every day we've got to make sure we plant some useful seeds. You know what those are in your own life. You know what your goals are. You know what you're preparing for and what you're working toward. That counts too. All right, from my heart to each one of you, much love. It's going to be a great show tonight. Ariel, you're going to tackle a complex subject here. I'm really interested in it. I'm glad you can tell us all this stuff. You're so gifted. It's going to be very interesting. I'm glad you're doing this. Thank you so much for doing this for us.
Quite welcome. And thank you for the news. There's some great stories.
Sure. Well, I'll see you again in a couple weeks, and good night, everybody.
Okay. Good night. Yet, interestingly, that last story about giving ecosystems rights and, you know, a right to survive and thrive and not be polluted, that's one of the effects of this Jupiter-Uranus conjunction. So because it's in Taurus, and Taurus is an earth sign. So let me just switch screens here. So it will happen on April 20th, 2024. Jupiter will conjunct Uranus in Taurus for the first time in 83 years. So this is a transit to get excited about, not only for your personal growth and expansion, but also for the planet. So on a global scale, Jupiter brings the greater vision, the bigger picture, seeing possibilities that seemed out of reach before. And because it's in Taurus, which is an earth sign, public consciousness will seek ways to help the environment, to challenge the status quo, and bring new opportunities. Now, Uranus is a planet of electrical energy. It's like a lightning bolt that can bring unexpected or sudden changes. You never see it coming, but it always brings a shift. It's also the planet that rules technology and genius, so we'll likely see some innovative ideas in that area. So when these two energies combine, it can bring abundance in new ways. And as it happens in Taurus, which is a fixed earth sign, Taurus is slow to change, somewhat pragmatic, and loves to have a plan. It's great for investing in yourself, in your future, through your work. Taurus is also about values and belief systems. So with Jupiter and Uranus adding their energy to that, faulty belief systems not based on truth will be revolutionized. I guess we need a lot of that in a lot of areas. So your birth chart is always being affected by the current planetary positions, like the changing weather. So if you know your chart's house cusps, you can determine where this conjunction is most active. Each house rules a particular area of life, so depending on where Jupiter and Uranus is transiting your chart, that will be the area with the greatest growth, surprising opportunities, and great abundance. Both Jupiter and Uranus love freedom. So if this conjunction happens in a house where you feel restricted, creatively stifled, or stuck in some way, something will happen that liberates you. But so often, though, people cling to the very thing that holds them back. So it might be upsetting to have that changed, especially since Taurus is not a big fan of change. But in the end, you'll see it as a great blessing. Now, Jupiter takes about 14 years to make a complete orbit around the Sun. So take advantage of the fertile ground that is here now, because whatever you plant, create, invent, or begin will grow stronger. The presence of Uranus with Jupiter brings the harvest for years to come. So if you plant well and do the work while they're conjunct, that will bring the great harvest. Just like Anastasia was saying, it's the seeds that you plant under the energy of this conjunction. Well, this is an exciting time for the planet because many of the systems we have built are faulty in some way, outdated, they don't work anymore, maybe they used to work, but they have problems. Whether it's environmental, monetary, social, technological, or popular attitudes, if it's not working, these energies will help us to fix it, to do away with it, or replace it with a better, more functional system. Now, at the same time, we have Pluto in Aquarius, which will stay there after November of 2024. It's been dancing forward and retrograde, back and forth over the line between Capricorn and Aquarius. And it will go direct at last in November and stay there. So Pluto is also a revolutionary, transformative, and regenerative energy. So those undercurrents will team up with Uranus and Jupiter. And then in May of this year, 2024, Venus will join Jupiter and Uranus and add her beneficial influence to the changes. Venus and Jupiter are known as the benefic planets. They bring expansion, growth, fun, entertainment, good social interactions. So Venus will just add her beauty and grace to that conjunction. So if you don't have your natal chart, there are many places online where you can run it to see which house has Taurus. And it can be any of the 12. And it depends on your rising sign, because your rising sign is like the starting point. And it is the first house cusp. And it is the sign that was rising the moment you were born. And then the houses will go in order from that sign, whatever it might be, all the way around. So the house that holds the Taurus can be anywhere on your wheel. And the domain or energies of that house that'll be where you get the most benefit and change. So you can use this time to capitalize on those energies through your actions and intent. So in a minute, I'll go through all 12 houses. So when you find this transit conjunction in one or maybe two, they could be straddling the line, but by April 20th, they will be on the very same degree. So they will both be in the same house. Then you can understand the greatest areas of influence so you can make the most of it. You can also get our daily transit calendar, which comes with everything you need to know your transits, and then the best book to interpret those is Planets in Transit by Robert Hand. So if you already are familiar with your natal chart and you know where your house cusps, where your rising sign is, this will kind of help you to see what areas of your life are going to be the most impacted by this Jupiter-Uranus conjunction. And if you don't know what your rising sign is, there are a lot of places online where you can run your chart, and it might not have the starseed house system, which would be Koch, K-O-C-H, but it'll be close if you use the standard Placidus. So in astrology, the first house, if you think about the wheels, the wheel and the houses, like a pie with 12 pieces, the first house is always following your rising sign. And that, just like birth and you know, maturing and going through your life, the houses are kind of set up to coincide with that. So the first house, the emergence, the birth, it's the way you see the world and the way the world sees you. Just like, you know, the day you were born, you got your first look at the world and the world got its first look at you. And in that first house, it is naturally ruled by Aries. So, and that is in alignment with the fact that Aries is about the self and your outward energy, your go out and do energy. So the first house is about your view of the world and the world's view of you. So if your rising sign was Taurus, then you've got this Jupiter-Uranus conjunction in your first house. As long as the degrees are right. I mean, if your rising sign, let's say, was like 28 Taurus, almost done with Taurus, then this would back it up to the previous house. But we won't get too complicated with those kind of details here. So with Jupiter and Uranus in that first house, you will see possibilities and your view of the world, your search for truth always goes along with Jupiter. And also with Uranus there, that brings the revolution. So if there are things in the world around you that need to change, whether it's your view of them or the way you interact with them, Uranus in the first house will bring that. And it's a time when, if you think about maybe someone you know or a previous time in your life when you went through a big transition or metamorphosis of some kind, and people that have known you for a long, long, long time, they say, oh, you're a different person. What happened? And it's because of this sudden metamorphosis and seeing things in a different way that helps to bring about that change when you kind of let go of things that haven't been working. And it's a step up. And so people that don't take that step up with you are the ones who are going to say, it's like, wait, you're not the person I used to know. Well, in a lot of cases, I say, thank you. That's a good thing. So that's the first house. Now, the second house is about resources, what you value, your belief systems. It's also about your money, as well as art and beauty, because the second house is ruled by Venus. And the natural ruler of the second house is Taurus. So if you have this Jupiter-Uranus conjunction in your second house, there should be like bells and whistles going off. This is a very auspicious time with, you know, Taurus rules money, and the second house is ruled by Taurus. So with Jupiter in Taurus, that's where the abundance, the prosperity, the opportunities for, and it's not, it doesn't, I mean, resources doesn't have to be money. It's the things that are useful for you that help you to expand and grow. Also, when Uranus is in that house, the values, your belief systems can take a radical change. But always remember, as I go through these houses, when Uranus, when the lightning bolt of Uranus strikes, it might be upsetting because it came out of the blue. You might feel like, I never saw that coming. But it will ultimately be a great blessing, even if it is in disguise at first. Because as I said earlier, a lot of times people have trouble letting go of things that they know aren't serving them well. And a lot of times it's, you know, your beliefs, your programming, the things that you've been programmed with by parents and teachers and organized religion. And Uranus just kind of comes in and changes all of that. And both Uranus and Jupiter, as I said before, are about freedom. And especially Uranus is liberation. So if you had a belief system that was holding you back, Uranus comes in, throws his lightning bolt, and just, you know, blows it up so that you can be liberated from something that was holding you back, even if you didn't know it was holding you back, when it comes to your belief systems and programming that has been installed by others. So great abundance. And certainly, you know, with Jupiter in the second house, you could easily have, you know, money coming from unexpected places. So that is a place where, like, we've really been watching for, I mean, for a lot of people, considering the state of the economy right now. Now, the next house, the third house, is naturally ruled by Gemini, and it is about communication, information, developing information, researching information, teaching it, writing it, speaking it, any form where information is being exchanged. So new areas of thought, new areas of study, greater abilities, especially like writing. If you have the inclination as a writer and you've got this Jupiter-Uranus conjunction in that third house, this is the time. You know, don't put it off any longer. Because, again, following this theme that I, statement that I made earlier, the seeds that you plant under this energy will continue to you know, yield harvest year after year after year, long after this conjunction is over. So it's really important to kind of think of a plan on how you can best utilize this energy, because it is in Taurus, and Taurus always likes to have a plan. Taurus is not one to just do things impulsively. So think about your fondest dreams and what you would, and if it involves something with teaching or writing or speaking, this is a great time to get that solidified. So the next house, the fourth house, naturally ruled by Cancer. And it is about, in traditional astrology, it's about your home, your family, your base of operations, your history, your memories. It's a very deep house. And on the surface, and it also, of course, the fourth house is about real estate, because that's about, you know, your home and your base of operations. But, I mean, for starseeds, this is also about your starseed family. So with this Jupiter-Uranus conjunction in your fourth house, you may start meeting other people of like mind, your tribe, your soul group, however you want to label that. It's also a great time for investing in real estate. Or if there's something about your home that is impeding you, whether it's a financial burden or in disrepair, you know, Uranus can help there in helping you to change that. And then Jupiter kind of ensures that the change will be very positive and beneficial. And certainly collaborating with other star seeds, you may start meeting people, and the minute you meet them, you just know that this person seems familiar. So the next house would be the fifth house, naturally ruled by Leo. And this is another really, really good place for this Jupiter-Uranus conjunction, because the fifth house is about creativity, your creative expression, anything that you would create and put your name on, whether it's a child or a work of art. And all of the arts, writing, creative writing, music, drama, any form of art, photography, film, anything that is the creative is ruled by that fifth house. And Uranus is the creative. Uranian energy is when the light bulb goes off over your head and you just suddenly understand something, or you have a very profound thought or inspiration. Starseeds get downloads. Often this is Uranian energy when it comes out of the blue. So, and Uranus is also a planet that rules genius. Because when you think of it, you know, people that have that genius capacity, they just get an aha moment, and they understand something that maybe the rest of us don't. But the fifth house often has that connection all by itself with, you know, the creative genius. However, Uranus transiting that house is going to multiply that. And then with Jupiter in that house also, there's another aspect to the fifth house when it comes to investments or speculation, even gambling. So Jupiter is always up spiral. It's always expanding and growing, seeking the bigger picture, the next higher level. It's always infinitely evolving upward. And Uranus is just that electricity that kind of pokes it along the way. So any kind of speculation, investment, even if you've got this conjunction in your fifth house, it wouldn't hurt to buy a lottery ticket. Or even if it's in your second house, also wouldn't hurt. It's not saying that it's a guarantee, but somebody's got to win. I think that covers it for the fifth house. If you're an artist, you know, you may create the best work of your life regardless of the media that you use. It'll be very, very much taking you to the next higher level. So now we come to the sixth house, which is about health, healing, service, your daily work and service. So with Jupiter and Uranus in that house, you may revolutionize and expand the service you offer to others, especially if it's in any kind of a health service field. And with Jupiter in that house, in the sixth house, as well as the first house, there is the kind of a side effect, because Jupiter is unlimited growth and expansion. And because the first house is how people see you, and the second house is about your physical body, that Jupiter energy can help you to gain weight if that's what you want. And even if you don't want that, just try to eat as wisely as you can. But even if you do, you're still going to appear bigger. But once Jupiter moves out of there, then you can return to your normal average. But also with Jupiter in the sixth house, you generally will have strong fortitude, your constitution, you know, your body's resistance, your immune system can be expanded, can be increased. And with Uranus there, if there is something physically that you've been ignoring, something that's kind of, you know, slowing you down, or something that you just don't want to look at, you better take care of it, because, you know, Uranus can bring the unexpected. Yeah, you know, with Jupiter right there beside it, it's not likely to be a catastrophe, but it's always a good idea to pay attention to your body and give it what it wants and needs. And when it comes to, you know, your service and your daily work, you may have opportunities for different kinds of work, or maybe the same work in a different place, or you know, at a different company perhaps, if you work for another company. But work opportunities, and certainly if you're doing some kind of work, especially like in corporate America, where you have to kind of stay in a straitjacket, and you can't really express your creativity. You know, you've got someone telling you how to do your work, and you know that you could do it better if they would just, you know, stop looking over your shoulder. Those kind of situations, when you've got Uranus in the sixth house, you could just snap and say, that's it, I'm not taking it anymore. So that might be a rough situation to go through, but when you come out the other side, you will be so much more free and have this sense of really being able to use your talent that someone maybe had not recognized, not appreciated, or prevented you from doing. So there can be you know, more freedom in your work life. So now we go to the seventh house, which is the house of Libra. And it is about one-on-one relationships, whether it's your friends, your family, acquaintances, your romantic interest, your doctor, your dentist, your therapist, any kind of your students, your employer, any kind of relationship that is one-on-one. That's the domain of the seventh house. So when Jupiter is in the seventh house, it is expansion, growth. New people can come into your life that can, you know, have a beneficial effect on your life. There may even be people from another country or you might meet someone whose, you know, ancestry is in another country. Because Jupiter does rule foreign countries and foreign people and long-distance travel. But when it's in the seventh house, you probably will meet more people, have more people come into your life. Your existing relationships can be very much benefited by having this very up spiral energy to where you can work things out if that needs to happen. But Uranus in the mix, remember, Uranus will always liberate you from anything that's holding your growth back, holding your full creative expression back. So if you have a relationship that isn't great, Uranus may relieve you of that burden. So there could be people coming into your life replacing people that are going out of your life. And it's always going to be with benefit. So, yeah, relationships that are on rocky ground already, regardless of whether it's personal or professional, if it's on rocky ground, it probably won't survive that Uranus in your seventh house. Now we go to the eighth house. And the eighth house is naturally ruled by Scorpio. And Scorpio is about, I create. Those are the words for Scorpio. And you've got a very creative energy in that house. And it's also, the eighth house is about transformation. Or transformation is a sequence of events that brings change, where transmutation is sudden. It's here it is. The change is just happens. It's also about rebirth, regeneration, resurrection. It's a deeply spiritual and mystical house. The psychic ability, very much ruled by that eighth house, one of the houses that rules that. So, and on a more 3D level, the eighth house is about other people's money. And if you can kind of picture the wheel, the second house and the eighth house are exactly 180 degrees apart. So there is a counterpoint. So while the second house is about your money, the eighth house is about other people's money. So if you've got Jupiter in that eighth house, you will benefit from other people's resources, whether it's their money, their expertise, anything that they have that that can be a benefit to you, that can come in. And also with Jupiter in that eighth house, your intuition can be increased. And then add Uranus to the mix. That's where, you know, the boom, the light bulb goes off over your head, and you get an idea. It's like, ooh, I got an idea. Wow. And it helps you to transform that that energy into a higher level. So you have greater intuition, greater empathy, deeper psychic abilities. And another thing on the other side, because the eighth house is about other people's money, if you're dependent on another person for your support, then with Uranus in that house, the change might happen to the other person. And they may change jobs. They may have a different, you know, financial things happen where their support for you, it might get better or it might get worse. They might be able to do it better, or they may not have as much to help you with. So it can go either way depending on the other person's situation. But creativity, if you want to basically make something out of nothing where you can just take odds and ends and turn it into something that's very functional, very useful, and very beneficial to you, that's another thing that the eighth house is really good at. So creating with what you have to work with. Now, the ninth house, this is the home of Sagittarius. And Sagittarius is the ruler of Jupiter. So Jupiter is the ruler of the ninth house. And it's in its own home where it really, really loves to be. So the ninth house is about ultimate truth, the greatest freedom and justice. It's about higher spirituality, higher spiritual philosophies, you know, higher education. It is also about publishing and long-distance travel. So when Jupiter is in its own house, all of these areas of your life are going to be enhanced, elevated, opportunities that you hadn't anticipated. Because remember, we've got Uranus there as well. That's where, you know, it just like a bolt out of the blue, it drops right in your lap. But because it is more of I think of it as a more metaphysical house, because, and a lot of star seeds have a lot of planetary involvement in that ninth house, it is a house of the perpetual seeker. And this will, with this Jupiter and Uranus conjunction in that house, that will help you kind of, you know, jump up a few steps on the ladder to your understanding, to your view of the big picture. And, you know, I mean, everybody has a view of the big picture, but as you go higher and higher in frequency, that picture changes. So we're working towards that ultimate big picture, the ultimate truth. And as I mentioned, it is also a house that has to do with publishing and law. So if you have any inclinations as a writer, this is a really good time to get published if that Jupiter Uranus is in your ninth house. Or if you have any kind of legal proceedings and Jupiter is in your ninth house, it will work out to your ultimate benefit. You might not think so at first, because sometimes what you really think you want is not going to be what the best that it could be for you. I remember an instance where I told somebody who was going to a court hearing, and I said, it's going to benefit you. It's going to work out. It's going to be very fortunate. And then later, I heard, it's like, I don't even want to talk about it. What I wanted, I didn't get. And then months and months later, it turned out that if he had gotten what he wanted, he would have been in a very bad position. But since he didn't get what he wanted, he actually got what he ultimately needed. And he was so grateful that it worked out the way it did. So even when you think something isn't exactly what you wanted, maybe what you wanted was not as good as it could be. So any kind of legal proceedings, it will work out in your favor, whether or not it seems like that at first or not. Now, with Uranus in that ninth house, this is often the house where people receive downloads, and star seeds know what I'm talking about, when you start being fed information that's coming from upper dimensions, from your star family. And it is very often Uranus that is the wire it comes in on. So with Jupiter and Uranus in the ninth house, it'd be like exponential spiritual growth, understanding, finding higher truth than you've ever found before. Very, very good placement for starseeds. Now the next house, the 10th house, this is a house of your work, your career. It can be your contribution to the outside world, your public image. It doesn't necessarily mean what you do for a paycheck, because a lot of starseeds have a day job, but their real work is something that they just do, and they collaborate with other starseeds, which is also part of that 10th house. So when I say work in the outside world, it's not necessarily, you know, what you do and punch the clock. It is your contribution to the world at large. And with Jupiter in the 10th house, work opportunities to make greater contributions to the, you know, the benefit of humanity, maybe opportunities for different kind of work, because you've got Uranus on top of Jupiter, and you could have a job opportunity that just comes out of the blue. Never saw it coming. That's the nature of Uranus. So with Jupiter Uranus in the 10th house, business will be good. Your work will be beneficial, not only to you, but to the world at large. And if you need to make a change, this will help you to do it, and it will be beneficial, because Uranus brings the change, and Jupiter, you know, makes sure it's, you know, going up and not down. So a really good combination for expansion of your mission, your work to the outside world. So now we go to the 11th house, which is the home of Aquarius, and Uranus is the ruler of Aquarius. So Uranus will be at home in the 11th house. Now, traditional astrology calls this the house of wishes and dreams for the future. It's about, you know, a vision, progressive thinking outside the box, a humanitarian efforts, things that you do that would benefit humanity. It's about brotherhood and sisterhood. The 11th house is very transparent. Excuse me, if you would think of, it's part of the problem, you know, for the age of Pisces, that things were hidden and secret, you know, secret controls and secret societies. But the 11th house is just out, you know, out where everybody can see it. And new technologies, if they're coming out, excuse me, as, you know, Anastasia has presented in the news many times, new advances in technology. And this is my own editorial comment here. I'm really hoping that responsible technologies technology has some kind of regulation, because we don't want it racing ahead unbridled while, you know, the rest of us are trying to keep up. But this is a time when you can have people come into your life that you had agreed a long time ago to come together at this time to do this work. It is a house also of soul contracts. So with Jupiter in that house, it is very, very much about freedom and liberation and being able to see the big picture and communicate that to others while at the same time, some people are having brilliant ideas, inspiration that will help to make technology a good thing without the harm because we all know that there's a lot of technologies that they harm people. And that you know, social consciousness can be activated where we kind of, you know, put a leash on those things and pull them back for more study instead of just jumping on the bandwagon. Friendships, thinking outside the box, working together with souls that you have agreed to help lay the framework for a better future, and being able to benefit the masses. That's the 11th house. Now the 12th house, the last one, is ruled by Pisces, and the 12th house is about spiritual service to the less fortunate. It is also about things that are hidden, like soul records, ancient wisdom, ancient mysteries. That's the nature of the 12th house. And it's stuff that's private. It, you know, just because it's hidden doesn't necessarily mean that there's some, you know, deception involved. But there are things, you know, your dream life, your dream world, that's also ruled by the 12th house. The 12th house has the ultimate compassion and is about spiritual attainment. So, and it also has to do with organized religion as well as spirituality, which are kind of two different things. But with Jupiter in that house, there is and Uranus, there's kind of a push towards, you know, helping people on a spiritual level, and on a personal level, it can help you to expand and grow in your own spiritual center, while Uranus can help to illuminate the things that you've got in the closet that you need to go through and get rid of. So that is the nature of the 12th house. So that covers all the houses and this planetary conjunction. So if you can, if you know your chart and you know which house of yours has Taurus, because any house can have, because the rising sign can be any of the 12, then Taurus can be any of the 12 houses. So you need to go find out where that's going to happen in your chart and make the most of these energies and plant the seeds so that they will continue to bring the harvest. And I've told a few people this in sessions that I've done, that when the idea the idea and the motivation for creating Starseed Hotline back in 2009 is when I had Jupiter in my second house. So even though that had, you know, that's been gone for 14 years, now it comes back around, and the work that I did then has continued to bring benefit for, you know, for our team and everyone that we have been of service to. So it's something that you need to make the most of, and don't let it pass by, because it won't happen in Taurus again for 83 years, and Jupiter won't be back in Taurus for another 14 years. So that's why we're doing this show tonight, so that you can have that knowledge to make the most of it. And if you would, if you want to have your transits done, that's a service that we can provide, or you can go look it up on the internet. So that is it for us tonight. Okay, I got a question from our producer. does it make a difference what degree Jupiter or Taurus is in? Not as a transit, but I would say, you know, in starseed astrology, it's coming up that because Jupiter's already in Taurus, and Uranus is going to be there for a long, long, long time because it has a much longer orbit than Jupiter. So, yeah, when it gets to 26 Taurus, that's the mark of the Pleiades. So, yeah, that would make the degree of Jupiter would make a difference for certain people. Hang on a second. Let me just open up your mic. Did that answer your question, Kathy? Hello? Oh, is your phone on mute? Okay, well, I guess you can't hear me.
Yes.
I just oh, there you are.
So me, sorry. Yes, thank you.
Okay.
I was wondering. Mine was 21 degrees, and I was like, well, this is a degree, because I knew the 26 was the 25 galactic degree? Which one was galactic degree?
25, 26, and 27 are the galactic degrees. Yeah, so it's headed in that direction. It's not there yet. It's probably going to be, let's see if it's at 20. I'm trying to do this in my head, which is probably not a good idea. over the summer, let's just put it that. When it's warm outside, Jupiter will be at the mark of the Pleiades.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. So that's it for us tonight. So please do make the most of this alignment, because it is really something to get excited about. I know I've been watching it for almost a year, saying, come on, Jupiter, get going. So I want to thank you for listening, and we will be back in 2 weeks. And until then, remember, always keep gratitude in your heart. Count your blessings every day, and give compassion to everyone instead of judgment. So until next time, good night, everyone.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.